"Solicitors are out of bounds. I got a bit carried away. Forgive me, ladies."
"I don't mind," said Isabel. "Is there anything else you'd like to know?"
"I'd better not ask any more questions. I'm permitted to wonder aloud, though. Am I not, Daisy?"
"It's a free country."
"All right. I'm wondering, now that I've told you the deceased is a dark-haired woman, whether you have any ideas about who she might be, or how she ended up in your cellar."
"Mrs. Gray has dark hair," Isabel told him uneasily. "Short. Crimped." "Obviously," said Willie. "The most probable person to be involved is Mrs. Gray, whether as a victim or as the one responsible for the death. Don't you agree, Mr. Fletcher?"
"I'll go so far as to say that I expect the detective inspector to begin his investigation by checking whether the body is in fact Mrs. Gray."
"So, if it doesn't," Isabel suggested, "we'll know he's not much cop." As she spoke, the door opened. The boots appeared. "Detective Inspector Underwood. He wants to see Mr. Fletcher." A tall, thin man in a Sunday black suit and sober tie stood behind the boy, peering over his shoulder. The inspector had the sort of face that could be anywhere from 30 to 50 years old. His glance of dismay swept over the ladies, pausing on Isabel. Had he heard and misinterpreted her last few words? As his gaze settled on Alec, Daisy read in his expression a compound of mistrust, defiance, and uncertainty. 7. The landlord had lent D.I. Underwood his snug. The room where Mr. Whitford was wont to entertain friends and favoured patrons was small and cosy, with sagging armchairs long ago faded to an indeterminate brown. The smell of tobacco was all-pervasive, the low ceiling yellowish from centuries of fumes. Alec sat down by the fire without waiting to be invited. He was in no position to take control of the coming interview, but he was not about to let the inspector imagine that he could be dominated. He took out his pipe and tobacco pouch. Underwood stood for a moment looking down at him, his face gloomy. Then, sighing, he dropped into the chair opposite, long limbs asprawl.
"Harris says you're from the Met."
Alec took his warrant card from his inside breast pocket and handed it over.
"Not so much from as of. I'm not here on business."
Studying the card, the inspector sighed again.
"Detective Chief Inspector, Scotland Yard."
He took down the particulars in his notebook, then looked up.
"Are you saying you didn't come down about this business, sir? You weren't hot on the trail of a connection to some metropolitan crime, so to speak?"
"Great Scott, no. Whatever gave you that notion?"
"Sergeant Harris as good as told me so."
Underwood returned the warrant card and sat back.
"I can't be held responsible for whatever nonsense comes out of Harris's mouth."
"Frankly, sir, there are those who doubt whether Harris is always responsible for what comes out of his mouth. Why he was ever promoted. Well, never mind. This sort of thing is above his head. A nasty affair."
"Very nasty."
"Would you mind telling me how you came into the picture, sir?"
Alec was faced with the conundrum Daisy always complained about when he asked her for a coherent narrative. Where to start? Keep it short, he decided.
"I happen to be the person who opened the cellar door and discovered the body,"
Harris got that bit right then. What exactly is your connection with the family? The household, I should say. This all-female household.
They're not my harem, Inspector,
Alex said dryly.
If that's what you're wondering.
The thought never crossed my mind, sir.
Glad to hear it. My wife came down to Beaconsfield to convalesce. She was at school with Miss Chandler. I take it Harris managed to give you all the names correctly. I spelled them out for him.
No.
Underwood sighed.
He said a mob of spinsters was known to reside in the house, but they'd clear it out before he arrived. I'm sorry your wife was subject to such a terrible experience, sir, especially if she's been ill. Harris didn't mention her, and wasn't able to give me any names except yours.
Never mind,
said Alec, tolerant of the failings of subordinates for whose mistakes he was not responsible.
The sergeant was in pretty poor shape after the shock.
The inspector's snort made a change from his size.
Mrs. Fletcher.
The name went into his notebook.
Miss Chandler, was it, sir?
Miss Wilhelmina Chandler, Miss Vera Layton, Miss Isabel Sutcliffe.
Thank you, sir. Miss Chandler was at school with Mrs. Fletcher. They're not elderly spinsters, then. Some of these surplus women, like they talk about in the papers, they'd be.
They wouldn't appreciate the epithet, but yes, I believe that's a fair enough description.
Newcomers to the district, Harris said.
As to that, I only know what my wife has told me. You won't want third-hand information. You'll have to ask them.
Fair enough. Had you ever met any of them before?
Never.
Not even Mrs. Fletcher's schoolfellow? At your wedding, for instance?
We had a quiet wedding. Just family. Miss Chandler may have been invited to the reception. I don't know. If so, I'm pretty sure she didn't attend. She lived up north, after all, and not in affluent circumstances, and wasn't especially close to Daisy. It's possible she came, and I somehow missed meeting her.
You'll have a good memory for names and faces, no doubt, in our business.
I do. However, I can't say my mind was running on those lines at the time. Are you a married man, Inspector?
Widower. Lost my wife in the flu.
So did I, my first wife.
After a silent moment of mutual commiseration, an unexpected grin lit on Underwood's dour face.
I'll be blamed if I can't remember a thing about our wedding breakfast. Right. Mrs. Fletch is convalescing in Beaconsfield, and she calls on her friend, very natural, even if they weren't close. And you, sir?
I came down to see Daisy, and to drive her back to town after a pleasant weekend in the country.
No such luck, eh? Your good lady was eager to introduce you to her friends, I expect.
Rather the reverse.
Oh? Why was that?
Alec was half amused, half irritated to have his own techniques used against him.
Look,
he said,
I'll tell you what happened and what I observed. For opinions, wishes, hopes, reasons, you must apply to those concerned. The ladies at Cherry Trees invited my wife and me to Sunday lunch. We reached the house sometime between 12:30 and 1:00.
You can't be more precise.
No. Miss Sutcliffe was busy in the kitchen. They keep no cook. Miss Chandler and Miss Layton invited us into the sitting room. We were offered sherry. One of them, Miss Chandler, I think, but couldn't swear to, apologized for its mediocre quality. One or the other mentioned that the previous owners were reputed to have owned an excellent wine cellar. The ladies had speculated that when it was cleared out, a bottle of something good might have been overlooked. However, the door was locked, and they had not been provided with a key.
They could have sent for a locksmith.
I dare say they would have, in due time, when they'd settled in. But that's mere speculation. I offered to take a look and see if I might be able to help. It's a simple, old-fashioned lock, as no doubt you noticed.
Easy to pick.
For anyone with the slightest knowledge and skill, and a suitable instrument. Miss Chandler produced a wire coat hanger. The ladies, including my wife, accompanied me to the door to watch.
Including Miss... the cook? Miss Sutcliffe, is it?
She was there when I opened it. She saw us pass the kitchen, I suppose, and followed to see what was up. Picking the lock took only a few moments. As soon as I pushed the door open, all four ladies fled to the kitchen and closed the door.
And who can blame them? D.I. Underwood said feelingly. I'd have liked to turn tail myself. How would you account for none of them noticing the stink before? The cellar isn't completely airtight. You didn't get a whiff as you approached.
Nothing suggestive of decay, but...
He flared his nostrils, remembering.
Carbolic.
I knew it. They did smell it and tried to conceal it.
Hold on. It's more likely, wouldn't you say, that they smelled something vaguely unpleasant and tried to eliminate it with disinfectant?
Speculation, sir.
Underwood's face was bland.
We'd better get this straight, sir, so we understand each other. I hope you won't take it amiss. You're a superior officer. I'm not questioning that, but this is my patch. Unless I decide I can't cope, and my super agrees, this case is my pigeon. I won't say you couldn't be useful to me, but when all's said and done, you're a witness. Even was I to call for the yard to help, chances are it wouldn't be you they send.
For witness, read suspect. You're quite right, Inspector.
Alec acknowledged ruefully. At least at this stage of the game. I hope you won't hold it against me, sir. Seems to me, though, for the present, we'd better stick to the facts, as you said.
Meaning a description of what I saw when I opened the cellar door. All right, here goes. For a start, you must realize that all I had to see by was a small torch. If there's electric lighting down there, I didn't care to look about for the switch.
I don't blame you. Proper pongy that was. I'd go so far as to say the most revolting pong I've ever smelt.
Far be it from me to contradict you.
Having warning, we brought an arc light. As it happens, there is an electric bulb in the cellar, but the switch is awkwardly placed, an arm's length from the door. A quick look with a torch. You wouldn't have taken in much beyond a very dead woman. I suppose.
A bit more. I'm a copper, after all, even if beyond my bailiwick, and a detective to boot. I noted the broken rail on the left, of course. The woman was lying on her back, just below it. She appeared to be well-dressed, in tweeds, a silk blouse, and pearls. Whether real or imitation, I couldn't tell from above.
But you could tell her blouse was silk.
The material had a sheen. Could have been artificial silk, to be sure, but the rest suggested otherwise. She was wearing one shoe, well polished. Again, judging from the sheen.
Not much dust down there.
No, the cellar is supposedly nearly airtight. I didn't see the second shoe.
It was found on the floor, directly below the landing.
It must have come off as she fell.
Or as she hit the floor.
Could be.
It's hard to see what could have made her lose her balance, don't you think?
You're asking me to speculate, Inspector? No.
Underwood paused with a sheepish look.
Well, yes, I suppose I am. On second thoughts, it would be a bit silly not to take the opportunity to pick your brains. You've got much more experience in this sort of thing than I do.
I've never come across anything quite like this before. I take it you're convinced the death is a homicide.
Oh, yes. It seemed obvious at first, because of the door being locked. Then I realized she might for some reason have locked it behind her and put the key in her pocket, then stepped back from the door and took Dizzy as she started down those steep, narrow stairs. She'd likely have fallen on her face, though. Besides, the doctor checked her pockets, and there's no keys at all.
You're quicker than I was. I didn't think of the pocket possibility until just now, when I was describing her clothes to you. It's a bit odd that she was on her back, whichever direction she was going in.
My guess is, when she lost her balance, she twisted to make a grab for the rail attached to the wall, and missed it.
I missed it too,
Alec said ruefully.
Missed seeing it, that is. My attention was all in the opposite direction, and in trying not to breathe. Was the doctor able to say how long ago she died?
Underwood grimaced.
Very vague, given the unusual conditions. Cool, dry, no flies. At a guess, 2 to 4 weeks. The local sergeant says the ladies moved in about a fortnight ago.
At the beginning of October.
Just so. Lots of coming and going, and general confusion that someone took advantage of. The victim was, you might say, a moving target.
Ouch.
Sorry, sir. Bad pun.
An excellent pun.
Underwood looked gratified. I have a go at the Observer crossword every week. Puns are the least of Torquemada's tricks. But wouldn't you agree about the coming and going?
The change of residence would account for the long delay before the finding of the corpse. But whether that was planned or was a lucky happenstance for the killer remains to be seen. No reports of local people missing.
None. The first thing we have to do, of course, is identify the victim.
He hesitated. According to Sergeant Harris, rumor had it that the previous owner of Cherry Trees, Mrs. Gray, was going abroad. I can't help wondering whether she ever arrived.
Supposing it's her body, then you'll know she didn't. I don't know how long she lived here. But you should be able to find someone who'd recognize her.
Once she's been cleaned up a bit, maybe. She's a mess, though. I don't like to ask a woman to do it. I suppose the ladies who bought the house would have met her.
You'll have to ask them,
Alec said firmly.
All right.
Underwood sounded quite cheerful. Just finding out where the boundaries are.
A couple more questions for you, sir. You couldn't see the second shoe under the landing.
Fair enough. Was there anything else down there that you noticed? Alec frowned in thought.
A hat. An ordinary sort of cloche hat, as far as I could see, lying not far from her head.
That's all.
I'm pretty sure, though I had only a small torch and didn't linger. Remember?
No handbag, for instance.
Not that I saw.
Gloves?
She certainly wasn't wearing gloves.
Rings?
Her hands were grossly swollen, and they lay palm up. Chances are I wouldn't have been able to see the shanks of wedding and engagement rings, or even a large gemstone, if any.
You didn't go down the stairs?
No, she was so obviously beyond needing help. Was there a handbag?
Underwood shook his head.
A hat and no handbag,
Alec commented.
It's odd.
Maybe it'll turn up somewhere in the house.
Perhaps one of the ladies found it and put it aside to be kept till called for.
Possible,
the inspector allowed, grudgingly. You see, you've already given me an idea or two. I don't suppose you'd care to sit in on my interviews, some of them, at least, on an informal basis. Not taking part, of course, but passing on any hints afterwards. Questions I should have asked, inconsistencies I missed, that sort of thing. No, you won't want to spoil your holiday with your lady wife.
My holiday ends at 9 tomorrow morning.
You going back to London?
Duty calls.
And Mrs. Fletcher?
She's thinking of staying on a few days.
It's only half an hour by train. You could come back evenings. I'll be working day and night till I've got my man. Or woman.
I may well be working day and night if a big case comes up. And not necessarily in town. I could be sent anywhere in the country.
I dare say I'd have to ask officially for your help.
Underwood sighed.
I'd rather try to tackle it myself.
While unofficially picking my brains,
Alec said dryly. While learning from an expert. What if there isn't any important case waiting for you at the yard? I'm sure Mrs. Fletcher would appreciate you rejoining her and being here anyway. Surely you'll want to help me exonerate her friends.
Or incriminate them.
I'd be less likely to make a mistake that'd fix the blame on an innocent person if I had your advice.
My super would blow a fuse. Oh well, I can't withhold from him that I'm a star witness in a murder case, so he's going to blow a fuse anyway. I'll put it to him. And you must ask your super's consent. He may be less convinced of my innocence than you appear to be.
I'll tell him it's the best way to keep an eye on you, the inspector said slyly. Which is no more nor less than the truth.
8. Vera made sure the door was latched behind Alec and the inspector, then turned and said,
He heard you, Izzy. I'm sure he heard you say he's not much cop.
That's not what I said, Isabel pointed out. Besides, I'm sure he has more important things to worry about. And so do we. For a start, I'd better write a note to Mrs. Hedger, telling her not to come tomorrow. If she turns up and finds a constable station at the door, there's no telling who'd come out the winner. Where do they keep the writing paper in this place?
Over there. Daisy pointed to a dimly lit corner of the lounge. There's a desk lamp. Edward will deliver your note. He's very reliable.
Edward? The boots?
Willie laughed.
Typical Daisy. Only you would know the name of the boots. And you've taken Sally Hedger under your wing.
She took me under her wing when I was ill. She's a sweetie.
I defy anyone to say the same of her aunt, said Isabel gloomily, switching on the lamp on the writing table. She'll probably demand to be paid for tomorrow. Well, it's not her fault she won't be working. But it won't surprise me if she quits because of the murder.
Vera shuddered. I wouldn't blame her.
I doubt she'll give up the job, said Willie. After all, before we moved in, she went on cleaning cherry trees without knowing whether we'd pay or continue to employ her. Very set in her ways, Mrs. Hedger, Isabel agreed. Sounding a bit more cheerful. Let's just hope she'll stay. And agree to clean the cellar. I bet she'll be the first person the inspector wants to talk to. Daisy pondered aloud. After you three, that is. You obviously know very little about Mrs. Gray. Mrs. Hedger must know plenty, having worked for her for years. Did she have other servants? A woman answered the door when Vaughan brought us round to see the house, said Isabel. She was a cook-housekeeper, I think. She didn't apply for a job with us. Not that I need a cook or housekeeper. I'm pretty sure there was a lady's maid, though I never met her face to face. The Grays' gardener did ask me to keep him on. He worked for the Grays full-time and wanted to stay, but I had to tell him I'd do all but the heaviest stuff. He didn't want part-time work. He recommended a jobbing gardener, Lassiter, who's available pretty much whenever I need him. I've no idea where the other fellow went, nor the women. He didn't live in, so presumably he was local. Do you remember their names? Haven't the foggiest. I'm sure I never heard the maids. The gardener was Smith, or Brown, or Jones, or something equally unmemorable. Lassiter would know, Willie suggested. Yes, tell the inspector about Lassiter, Isabel. Willie grinned. You've gone into sleuth mode, Daisy. Sorry, I can't help it.
It's all right, said Vera. After practicing with you and Alec, it will be easier to face the police. Not that I have anything to tell them.
You don't hear any gossip at school?
Not really.
Vera flushed vividly.
There's just Mr. Cartwright. He doesn't gossip.
Most men don't. Not with women, at least.
As she spoke, Daisy wondered, why the blush? Did Vera have a crush on Cartwright? They share rumours only with other men, usually in a pub. It's very inconvenient.
You don't have mothers coming to pick up the little ones after school?
A few. Most either live nearby or have older siblings. The ones who do come mostly want to talk about little John or Jane.
We just haven't been living here long enough, Willie reminded Daisy. I hear a bit of gossip in High Wycombe, but it's local, not about Beaconsfield people. I'm afraid we're really not going to be much help to the police.
They won't think we're being deliberately uncooperative, will they, Daisy?
Vera was by far the most anxious of the three. I can't see why they should, but so much depends on what they've found out so far, and the character of the detective in charge.
What?
Willie broke off as a couple of men entered the lounge. For a moment, Daisy assumed they were plainclothes police, but they looked taken aback to find four women in possession of the room. Detectives would have expected to find them there.
Excuse us, ladies, one said breezily. Just want a quiet drink. We won't disturb you.
But he looked meaningfully at the ladies' parlour sign.
We're waiting for my husband.
Daisy hated to find herself on the defensive. She hoped the others didn't often feel they had to excuse their lack of a male escort.
Don't mind us.
The second man rang the bell. Then they sat down as far away as they could. The bell ringer had a quiet voice, but from what the other said, they were commercial travellers from London, planning calls on local shopkeepers in the morning, before moving on to High Wycombe and beyond.
We can't talk here, Willie whispered. Should we go through, or up to your room, Daisy?
No. We'd better wait till Alec or the police come back. In the meantime, we'll just have to talk about our knitting.
For some reason, that struck all of them as excruciatingly funny. They exploded in laughter, eliciting curious stares from the two men. Daisy had to admit she was no knitter. She attempted it so rarely that she always forgot how to purl. She extolled her stepdaughter's skill, however. The others were all enthusiasts and managed to keep a conversation going. It filled in time and lessened the tension they had all been feeling. The arrival of a hefty young man in a brown serge suit and police boots set them on edge again. After a swift glance round the room, he came over to them.
Mrs. Fletcher?
I'm Mrs. Fletcher.
Would you mind coming with me, please, madam?
As Daisy stood up, Willie asked, Where's Mr. Fletcher?
I believe he stayed with the inspector, miss, to have a word with Mrs. Fletcher.
Will he be rejoining us?
Not right away, miss, far as I know. If you was to feel more comfortable in the other room, that'd be all right.
You can be writing out lists of what you need from the house, Daisy suggested. She accompanied the officer through the lobby and several twists and turns of passages. May I ask your name?
He said, as if he wasn't sure whether it would be proper to give such information to a witness. Or a suspect.
Never mind, I'll call you Officer. But I assume there are several officers about, so it would be easier.
Penny Cook, madam, he informed her hastily. Double N-I-C-U-I-K.
I bet lots of people spell it wrong. Hard luck. Detective Sergeant. His ears turned pink.
Not yet, madam. Detective Constable. Maybe next year. D.I. Underwood thinks I show promise.
Good for you.
Some of the time,
he added with painful honesty. Daisy laughed. Never mind. Practice makes perfect. Good luck. What's Mr. Underwood like?
Tricksy. I mean, he's all right. As a governor. Madam, is it true Mr. Fletcher is a DCI at Scotland Yard?
It's true.
Gosh.
In the ill-lit passage, D.S. Pennycook's expression was not readable, but his voice changed from awed to businesslike as he opened a door.
This way, if you please, madam. Mrs. Fletcher, sir.
Alec came to meet Daisy, took her hand, and introduced her to D.I. Underwood. As they didn't appear to be at daggers drawn, she said with a warm smile, How do you do, Inspector? I hope I can help you, but I can't imagine how.
My job is to find out, Mrs. Fletcher.
Underwood shook the hand she offered, his clasp cool and firm.
Do take a seat. Would you prefer to have the Chief Inspector stay?
Oh, no, there's no need. Darling, I'm sure the others would be grateful for your reassurance that the Inspector is not an ogre.
Sorry, Mrs. Fletcher, I can't allow that. Sir, I prefer you stay away from the rest of the ladies until I've spoken to them.
As you wish, Mr. Underwood. You're in charge.
They exchanged a faintly amused look that puzzled Daisy.
I'll be in the bar, Daisy. I've earned a whiskey.
He left. Underwood sat down opposite Daisy, and she was aware of Pennycook settling in a corner slightly behind her, with his notebook at the ready. It was a position she had adopted more than once, when Alec was desperate for someone to take notes.
Tell me all about it, the inspector invited. Let's start with how long and why you've been staying in Beaconsfield.
I arrived on Monday evening. Daisy explained about bronchitis
and getting above the Thames fogs.
And being close to town, in case Alec should be able to come down for the weekend, as he did. Beaconsfield, rather than Surrey, because I'd recently heard from Willie, Miss Wilhelmina Chandler, that she'd moved here. She lived in the north, and I hadn't seen her for ages. We were at school together.
You had the best part of a week, then, to renew your acquaintance.
Did you? I was too ill the first few days. Everything set me off coughing. I went to tea on Friday.
So you didn't spend much time in the house, Underwood said regretfully. Pity. You'd never been there before?
No. I wouldn't know the previous owners from Adam. Or Eve. I've never been to Beaconsfield before, only through it, on the A40.
Did they show you round cherry trees on Friday?
I was feeling so much better, I walked over and... I hate to sound feeble, but by the time I got there, I was pretty much done in. Isabel, Miss Sutcliffe, plunked me in a chair by the fire and went to make tea. The others weren't back from work yet. All I saw of the house was the entrance hall and the sitting room.
That's a pity, from my point of view. What did you all talk about?
Our work, my children. To tell the truth, I dozed off for a while.
Quite natural, after your illness.
Oh, we talked about servants, I remember. The usual thing. And why the three of them came south. D.I. Underwood pounced.
Why did they?
Shouldn't you ask them?
I will. But I dare say, like most people, they'll be a bit nervous being interviewed by the police. As you, Mrs. Fletcher, obviously, or not. If you'll give me what one might call an overall view, I shan't take up their time with irrelevant questions.
Daisy had a feeling his rationale was somewhat specious, but she was always a bit muddled about what was hearsay, what was speculation, and what counted as reporting her own knowledge and observations.
This is what I remember, she said cautiously. I couldn't swear I'm getting it right.
No swearing involved at present, and it won't go in your official statement.
That made her even less certain that she ought to be telling him. She couldn't see what harm it could do, though.
All right, let's see. Where should I start?
I'll leave that up to you, Mrs. Fletcher.
In a nutshell, Miss Sutcliffe had a large house in Huddersfield, and not much money, so she took in lodgers. Willie, Miss Chandler, and Miss Layton had rooms there, and they became friends. Miss Chandler worked as a secretary and bookkeeper. She studied and took the exams, and became a chartered accountant.
Did she know? A bright young lady.
Very. But there was some ill feeling about her success at the firm she worked for that made her uncomfortable.
Some people are jealous of success, even when it's taken hard work.
That, and I gather, one of her bosses believed women had no business becoming professionals. She found a good job in High Wycombe, so she had to move. The others decided to stick with her. Miss Layton's a teacher. And luckily, St. Mary's School here in Beaconsfield had an opening. Miss Sutcliffe sold her house and bought cherry trees. She's housekeeper, cook, gardener, and landlady to some degree, I think. But I'm a little vague about that.
Then Miss Sutcliffe must be about the house much of the time. She's the most likely to know something about the previous residents.
I can't answer for her. That you will have to ask them.
Of course. Now, would you please tell me what happened at Cherry Trees today?
Alec and I were invited to lunch. We...
Just a minute. When did you receive the invitation?
When I went to tea. They invited me, then included Alec when I told them he was coming. If he didn't mind being outnumbered 4-1, they said.
Did they know then that he's a police officer? A detective chief inspector?
Willie did, Miss Chandler. She didn't tell the others. I prefer to keep quiet about it, in general. I expect your wife's told you how people look askance at a copper's wife.
She did.
He grinned.
Often and often. Go on.
Where had I got to?
Nowhere, as yet. I interrupted. Sorry.
Oh, yes. Alec and I arrived at the house at about 12:30. I don't know exactly, but I can't see that it matters. It's not as if she'd just died. Willie and Vera showed us into the sitting room and offered us sherry.
Can you remember which of the two actually made the offer?
No, but a tray with a bottle and 5 glasses was set out already, so it wasn't impromptu. One of them apologized for the quality of the sherry. I'm not sure who first mentioned the wine cellar and their hopes that they might find an overlooked bottle or two of something good, if they ever managed to open the door. Willie, I think. I wouldn't swear to it, though.
Where was Miss, Sutcliffe while this was going on?
In the kitchen, putting the finishing touches to the meal. It smelled wonderful. Daisy sighed. But of course, we never got to eat it. Underwood clucked in sympathy.
Miss Chandler asked the chief inspector to have a go at the lock.
Alec offered. Willie produced a bent wire coat hanger that Isabel had already used to try to open it, in vain. We all trooped along to watch Alec. Isabel came out of the kitchen, too. He jemmied the lock in just a few seconds and opened the door. It was horrible.
I hate to ask you this, Mrs. Fletcher, but can you describe the body for me? The way it lay, the clothes, and so on.
Not me. The stench made me turn tail before I caught so much as a glimpse.
And your friends?
I passed Willie. The others reached the kitchen, scarcely a step behind us, though, and one of them slammed the door. Vera, after asking Alec if he was coming.
Presumably, he said no.
I didn't hear. Anyway, he didn't join us for several minutes. He said, but that's hearsay, isn't it?
Not exactly. Not if you're telling me what he said about his own actions.
Oh. She nearly asked if he was sure, but it didn't seem tactful. He said, as far as I remember, that he'd opened the front and side doors and lots of windows, for which we were duly thankful, and that he had to ring up the police.
He didn't tell you what he'd seen?
No. Obviously it was a human body, or he wouldn't gone off to notify the local coppers. The GPO hasn't put the phone in yet.
They've been known to dally. What did you ladies talk about while he was gone? Any theories as to who it might be?
Not from me. Except I did wonder if it might be a burglar. But they hadn't seen any signs of burglary. Do you know yet how long she'd been there? Underwood frowned.
Mr. Fletcher told you it was a female. Just you? Or all four?
All of us. I think he wanted to see how they'd react. Wrong thing to say, she realized at once. The inspector looked thunderous.
He did he?
That's only my guess. It's instinctive with Alec. He's been a detective a long time. To deflect him, she asked again, do you know when she died?
Not till the autopsy, if then. How long have the ladies lived at Cherry Trees?
A couple of weeks. I don't know the exact date.
Someone said they were free to move in any time after the 1st of October. Again, that's something you'll have to ask them. Or her lawyer. Or the estate agent.
Do you happen to know the names of those two?
Not the lawyers. She kept quiet about Alec having asked for it. The agent is Vaughan.
Donald Vaughan, that'd be. Of Langridge's in High Wycombe.
Don't ask me. Anyway, the neighbours probably know when they moved in, even though they haven't exactly been friendly.
No.
Not actively unpleasant, I gather. Just not welcoming.
Yes, well, we'll be talking to them in any case.
Of course. You'll want to know when they last saw Mrs. Gray. He gave her an odd look. Part annoyance, part curiosity.
Indeed. You seem familiar with police methods.
Not for the world would Daisy reveal that she had been mixed up in more than a few cases. I am married to a copper. A muffled snicker came from D.C. Pennycook. Daisy didn't dare glance his way. She wondered just how the inspector and Alec had worked out their relationship in this case. Usually it was easy to tell whether the local man resented or welcomed the assistance of Scotland Yard, official or not. Insofar as she could judge, without observing their interaction, Underwood seemed ambivalent.
"We seem to have got sidetracked," he said mildly. "You mentioned talking with your friends about servants. Have they any?"
"Not living. Just a char 3 days a week. Mrs. Hedger. She'd be the best person to ask about the date they moved in. She worked for the previous owner and just stayed on, taking care of the house, when Mrs. Gray left. If she left. Sorry, but one can't simply turn off one's brain." Underwood heaved a deep sigh.
"No. I suppose it's too much to expect of the modern young woman."
"It seems pretty plain to all of us that the chances are she's either the body or the murderer."
"Mr. Fletcher's suggestion."
"As I remember," Daisy said dryly, "Miss Chandler was the first to voice the probability. No doubt Alec had already considered it. Being a policeman."
9.
D.C. Pennycook escorted Daisy back to the lounge. She was glad not to have to find her own way through the passages. Suddenly, she was very tired. 6 men were in the residence lounge now. A third had joined the original 2. Another pair, one smoking a cigar, consulted over a map spread on a table before them, and one solitary sat hunched over a mug of beer, contemplating his sorrows by the look on his face.
"Looks like the ladies moved to the other room," Pennycook said uneasily. "Unless they've scarpered."
"Nonsense. They have no reason to run away." Daisy trudged over to the connecting door. "If they're not here, they'll have gone up to their room. They're staying at the Saracen's Head, you know."
Oh.
The young detective turned bashful.
Would you mind taking a look, madam? I didn't ought to go into the ladies' parlour. Not without it's urgent. Mr. Underwood wants to see Miss Layton next, if you wouldn't mind asking her to come out."
She took pity on him. Besides, it would be silly for him to knock and wait for someone to respond when she was going in anyway. And it never hurt to get on the right side of a copper, however junior. "Hold on half a mo, then." The 3 looked round as Daisy entered and closed the door behind her. In her absence, they had all acquired drinks, which did not seem to have cheered them up.
"What's he like?" Willie asked.
Not bad. Daisy plumped into the nearest chair. He doesn't bite. The feeble witticism made them laugh more than it deserved.
We were just talking about whether we ought to get a dog, Isabel explained, thus locking the stable door after the horse has been stolen.
I would. Sorry to interrupt, but Mr. Underwood would like to see Vera.
Me? Why me? I mean, why me first?
I've no idea. A random choice, I imagine.
Oh, yes, I suppose so. Couldn't Willie or Iz go first, then?
He asked for you. You'd better go.
Buck up, Vera. Don't be such a drip, Isabel admonished her. Daisy said he won't bite.
He doesn't suspect Daisy, and she's married to a chief inspector. Daisy, would you come with me? Please?
I doubt he'd let me.
What about Alec? If he...
He didn't stay with me, and Mr. Underwood told him not to come and talk to you, so that's even less likely.
All right, let's see if he chucks me out.
She struggled wearily from her seat.
You're worn out, said Willie with concern.
Vera, I do think you might. It's all right, Daisy repeated. I don't mind, honestly.
Here.
Vera picked up the glass beside her.
I haven't taken a single sip. You drink it.
Daisy didn't ask what it was, just took a couple of swallows. Gin and tonic, which she didn't much like, but the warmth that coursed through her brought a smidgen of energy.
Come along.
As she opened the door, a mutter of voices in the residence lounge ceased. She noticed that all the residents present were watching PC Pennycook, who shifted uneasily from one foot to the other. In a low voice, she introduced Vera.
Miss Layton, officer, I'm going with her.
I don't know if the governor...
He looked round at the avid listeners.
We'll talk outside.
Their footsteps sounded loud on the bare boards. Behind them, the muttering started up again. Pennycook almost slammed the door behind him.
They're talking about us,
Vera said despairingly. They're strangers, Daisy pointed out, or they wouldn't be in there.
I'm sorry, Pennycook blurted. I wish I didn't look so much like a copper.
It'll wear off, Daisy consoled him, the longer you're a detective. She had kept walking fast while they spoke, and they had nearly reached the landlord's snug before the constable realized it. She shepherded Vera in.
Mrs. Fletcher.
Underwood rose.
Did you remember something?
Afraid not, Inspector. Miss Layton asked me to come and support her. With your permission, naturally. But I can't see why not.
You can't?
He gave her an incredulous look and glared at Pennycook, entering after the ladies.
Sir, I couldn't...
I didn't give him a chance to stop me, so don't berate him. Go on, she said persuasively. Let me stay. I promise not to say a word, just to hold Vera's hand, metaphorically.
Miss Layton.
Oh, please. I've never had anything to do with the police.
Not for the first time since he'd made Daisy's acquaintance, Detective Inspector Underwood sighed. He waved them to seats. The edge that had been in his voice when questioning Daisy completely vanished as, in a most prosaic tone, he requested Vera's full name and address. Next, he asked for her previous address, the temporary lodgings in High Wycombe, and before that, in Yorkshire.
I grew up in Yorkshire,
she volunteered, already much more comfortable with the situation, to Underwood's credit.
My father is a canon at York Minster.
I expect he would have liked you to stay at home.
Yes, he didn't want me to train as a teacher in the first place, but Mother coaxed him round. I didn't want to spend my entire life in the Minster Close, and I knew I'd end up living at home if I worked in a school in York, so I looked for a position in Huddersfield. You won't have to tell him about this, will you?
You're an independent adult, Miss Layton. I can't foresee any reason why I'd have to approach your family, though I can't promise. Why did you, all three of you ladies, choose to move south?
Daisy knew he had to ask everyone more or less the same questions, so as to compare their answers. Moreover, so far he hadn't obtained this particular information from those concerned, only from Daisy herself, and possibly from Alec, at one further remove. Hearsay, she told herself. Vera's account was no different from her own. Boring. Her eyelids drifted downward, and the voices seemed to come from a long way off. She wouldn't be much comfort to Vera if she fell asleep. Blinking hard, she tried to concentrate, as the inspector obliquely approached the happenings of the day. Vera was distressed, in spite of the kid glove treatment. Altogether natural, in Daisy's view. She herself would prefer not to talk or think about the discovery of the body. It had been a horrid experience, even though Alec had borne the brunt. But Vera's upset now was of a different nature from her near panic at the prospect of the interview with the police. Puzzling over the difference, Daisy missed another chunk of Vera's evidence. Talking about the murder evoked in the schoolmistress horror, pity, and a certain detachment. There had been nothing detached about her fear of stepping alone into the lion's den. D.I. Underwood had turned out to be not such a lion after all, and Vera seemed quite at ease. So was it just fear of the unknown, her lack of experience dealing with the police, that had sparked her earlier alarm? Or was the cause deeper, something that had happened to Vera? Daisy had a feeling that if she could remember everything everyone had said today and at tea on Friday, she would have a clue to... to what? She must have nodded off for a minute or two, because the next thing she heard was the inspector saying incredulously, "Nothing." Vera's response sounded defensive.
Why should they gossip about their neighbours to someone they barely know? All they want to talk about is their children.
The children don't tell you things.
About their own families, yes. Since I've been here, I've heard nothing I can't handle myself. Nothing that would make me report to the authorities.
You don't overhear the mothers talking to each other.
I don't listen,
Vera said primly, with a hint of rebuke.
What they say to each other is none of my business.
Underwood coughed, raising his hand to his mouth. To hide a smile, Daisy suspected.
Very proper, I'm sure. What about your colleagues? You don't chat with them?
No.
The single syllable was adamant, but Vera's voice trembled as she explained.
The only other teacher is the headmaster.
The inspector looked at her with narrowed eyes.
His name?
Cartwright. Roger Cartwright.
Underwood didn't pursue the subject, to Daisy's disappointment. She wanted to know what was going on between Vera and the headmaster. On the other hand, she didn't at all want Vera crying on her shoulder, so it was just as well that D.I. Underwood decided to end the interview. Perhaps he, too, was keen to avert tears, if possible. Alec always had a couple of extra handkerchiefs in his pockets, in case of weeping witnesses, suspects, and even villains. Underwood thanked Vera for her assistance, warning her that he'd probably have more questions for her later. He told Pennycook to escort her back to the others and return with Miss Chandler. When Daisy started to stand, he said to her,
Just a moment, if you please, Mrs. Fletcher.
Daisy examined her conscience. I didn't utter a single word, she said indignantly.